Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is Radio Free Mormon on the air, broadcasting behind enemy lines. Tonight's episode, Jen Camp's lawsuit against RFM, that's me, dismissed. You may recall that back on, it was around February 5th of this year, 2024, that I had reported that Jen Camp was trying to get me involved in the lawsuit that's going on between her and OSF and John DeLynn down in Utah. If you don't remember that, go back to that and review that, because I don't want to go over all those details now. A lot of stuff's been going on down there in Utah. Some of it involves me, some of it doesn't. And mostly I'm concerned about the stuff that involves me and very happy that this is dismissed. So it doesn't involve me anymore in that lawsuit down there. There have been a few other things going on, though, that I've learned about, mainly because of my involvement. And I'll report some of those on to you, the things that I think are of interest and noteworthy. By the way, it's also yielded another bar complaint against me from another one of Jen Camp's goons. So that'll be interesting as well. Now, let me see here if I can just put up on the screen the original or the motion that I had talked about the last time. This is what I had talked about the last time. I'm not going to go over it in all its 49 pages of glory. But this is where defendant Jennifer Camp's motion to seek leave from the court to file a counterclaim and add additional parties. And you may recall that the counterclaim, she had tried to file a counterclaim against John DeLynn and OSF. And she had done that once when she had attorneys. It was denied because it was late. Her attorneys had filed a motion to reconsider, i.e. a second motion on it. Judge denied it. And now that Jen Camp's attorneys have left, they've parted ways, and I reported on that last time too as well. Now, Jen Camp is bringing the same freaking motion on her own, thinking, well, I guess the third time's the charm, not realizing that that doesn't apply in court. And she filed a third counterclaim, a third motion to have a counterclaim, and as part of that motion, she wanted to add me and Gerardo Sumano as counter-defendants in her suit. So there's John DeLynn and OSF, who are the plaintiffs, who are suing Jen Camp, who is the defendant, and Jen Camp now wants to file counterclaims against them and add me and Gerardo as counter defendants. So counter defendants to her. So that was the claim that she filed, that she wanted the judge to rule on. We do have a ruling from the judge on that now, and that's one of the things I'll be reporting on as well today. Okay, so having said all of that, let me see here. I'm going to have to do a few things, and let's see if this is going to work here. Okay, let me increase the size of this, because there was also another motion that Jennifer Camp filed pro se on her own. She's got a legal advisor. She's got some people who know something about the law, though not enough, whispering in her ear behind the scenes. And so she had filed a motion for limine, which is a strange way to phrase it, but basically a motion to establish John DeLynn as an all-purpose public figure. And this was filed, I think, back on February 5th of 2024 as well. Not going to go through this whole motion. The main thing of this motion is, oh, let me see here if you can even see it on the screen here. Yeah, you can. Great. So the main thing about this motion is she's trying to have John DeLynn established as a public figure for all purposes, which means that his burden is higher in order to show that she defamed him. If you're a private citizen, you have a lesser burden to show that someone defamed you. If you're a public figure, then you have to show more. And if you're a public figure for all purposes, then you have to even show more. You have to show malice that this person is trying to defame you. I think they could probably show that, but it's better to not have a higher burden than you have to have. But this is what she's trying to do with this motion that she filed back, I think it was on February 5th. Okay, so having mentioned that one, let me see if I can do this. I'll go over here to where my motions are. We have a response to that, or an answer to that, from the judge. Okay, so, and then there was this whole issue about subpoenas, okay? Because this case has been going on for almost a year as of January, and in January 15th, I believe it was, of 2024, the time for discovery was over. And discovery is when you're issuing subpoenas, you're doing depositions, you're requesting documents. And in all these kinds of things, you are limited by the court. you have a certain number of deposition hours that you can distribute amongst the different witnesses that you want to depose. You have a certain number of requests for production that you can give. You have a certain number of interrogatories or written questions that you can propound or hand over in writing to the other side. All these things are limited. And the time frame for doing it is limited as well, because you got to have a time frame for discovery, because once discovery is over, then you know where you sit. Hopefully you can resolve it. If not, then you go to trial and you set the thing for trial. So what had happened is that after Jen Camp's attorneys had left, she's not represented anymore, all of a sudden now, and this is in January, discovery is basically over. It's on the verge of being over. She wants to reopen it once more, as if it's a brand new case and she's got a new lease on life because she has no lawyers. So she's issuing subpoenas all over the place. And she had issued one for me, or at least filed one for me. I found out about it through a circuitous route back in January. There are a number of people who had subpoenas that were filed for them and that she was then going to try and serve them. So I don't know if she ever actually served any. And when I say service, I mean legal service. She might have emailed some to some people and then wanted them to respond and all this kind of stuff. I know that she filed one with my name on it, but she never even emailed it to me. So I didn't even have the satisfaction of ignoring it, because it's too late. The subpoena is no good, and it wasn't properly served in the first place. The subpoena actually has to be served by one human being to another, unless you get special leave from the court showing that that's not going to work because of whatever reason, which she didn't do. So I didn't even get the satisfaction of ignoring this subpoena. But this was a statement by OSF of discovery issues and their request to quash the untimely subpoenas that she had submitted. And so here, I'm going to just double check here, make sure I have this on the screen. Looks like I do. Looks like I went ahead and redacted it. And OSF is asking the judge, Robert Faust, to quash the subpoenas. Get rid of them. They are no good. They're too late. And they give many, many different reasons for it. And it shows here that respectfully submit this SODI, that statement of discovery issues, right? Statement of discovery issues, SODI, as to defendant Jennifer Camp subpoenas on YouTube, Radio Free Mormon, ADP, LinkedIn, and then another person whose name should not really be out there. That's Maven's real name. Kara Burrell. Yeah. Subpoenas on Kara Burrell, Open Stories Foundation, Philadelphia Insurance, Steven Pieniker. I got no idea why, but I guess we'll never know because they end up getting quashed. Sunstone Foundation and Lindsay Hansen Park, Wells Fargo Bank and Donor Box. Collectively, the subpoenas. And the subpoenas are attached as Exhibit 1. And what ends up happening is that they give all of these reasons here that these subpoenas should be quashed. I'm not going to read through the motion, because when we get to the order from the judge quashing the subpoenas, which we will do here in a second, he basically recapitulates pretty much all of their reasons and fines for OSF and quashes the subpoenas. There were a few people, I was not one among them, who were somewhat concerned about these subpoenas being out there, but they don't have to be concerned anymore because those subpoenas are gone. So if we go over here to this order, and I'm going to increase the size of it, so hopefully you can read it too. This was entered on February 20th. It was the order granting plaintiff's statement of discovery's issues, request to quash untimely subpoenas, and request for fees, because they asked for attorney's fees on this too. The idea is, look, Jen is doing stuff that is so beyond the rules, so unusual, so wrong, okay, that plaintiff's attorneys, OSS attorneys, have to bring a motion to quash. Well, they shouldn't have to bring a motion to quash somebody who's doing something that's so beyond the pale that it shouldn't have been done in the first place. So the idea is this: if OSF's attorneys and John DeLynn's attorneys have to bring a motion to quash these subpoenas, well, they aren't doing that for free. They've got to charge their client for that work. And because they are doing this motion to quash something that never should have been done in the first place by Jennifer Camp, the idea is that they're asking the judge to say, hey, Jennifer Camp, you're the one who needs to pay the attorney's fees for John DeLynn's lawyers having to do this extra work, which they wouldn't have had to do, except for the fact you're doing the stuff that's so beyond the pale. That's the theory behind this and the request for fees that was made here to Robert Faust. Okay, now let's go through this. This is the order. Pursuant to Rule 37 of the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure, the court, having reviewed plaintiff's statement of discovery issues regarding subpoenas and requests for attorney's fees and defendant's opposition to statement of discovery issues and other pleadings and papers on file with the court, being fully advised, hereby denies plaintiff's SOD and requests for attorney's fees and orders as follows. Ms. Camp, now, it is strange that it says it denies plaintiff's SOD because it actually grants the SOD. It denies the request for attorney's fees. This language in here does not always track exactly what's going on in the order, but we'll get to that language and you'll see what I'm talking about here in a minute. Ms. Camp served 13 document subpoenas. A document subpoena, we'd call it a subpoena ducis tecus. It means it's not a subpoena that somebody has to show up in court. It's a subpoena saying, you need to provide documents to me. So it's a document subpoena. Ms. Camp served 13 document subpoenas on or after January 23rd, 2024 to YouTube. She actually never served them, at least not me. To YouTube, Radio Free Mormon, ADP, LinkedIn, Maven, Kara Burrell, Open Stories Foundation, Philadelphia Insurance, Stephen Pinecker, Sunstone Foundation, and Lindsay Hanson Park, Wells Fargo Bank, and DonorBox. Ms. Camp has agreed to withdraw the subpoena served on OSF. These remaining 12 subpoenas, which she did not agree to withdraw, collectively, these subpoenas were improperly issued for each of the following reasons. They were issued 9 days after the close of fact discovery. It is well established under Utah law that subpoenas for documents are subject to fact discovery deadlines, and as such, that they must be issued sufficiently in advance of the discovery deadline such that the responding party has the full time to respond before the discovery deadline. So in other words, if you've got 20 days to respond to a subpoena, you can't issue that subpoena as long as there's at least 20 days left in the discovery deadline for the person to have the full time allowed by law to respond. But you can't issue a subpoena like that 10 days before the discovery deadline, because then the person who receives it, even if they're served properly, which I wasn't at all, only has 10 days to respond, when actually the law gives them 20 days. So that's too late under the law. Hope that makes sense. That's what it's talking about here, I believe. Court quashed the subpoena and awarded attorney's fees because party failed to request the records through subpoena before the close of the discovery deadline. That's citing to this case up here for that proposition. Ms. Camp's contention that subpoenas requesting the production of documents may be issued after the close of fact discovery is inconsistent with Utah law and appears to conflate subpoena seeking discovery through the production of documents or for depositions with subpoenas that are issued for purposes of subpoenaing witnesses to appear at trial. So in other words, what she's done is she's confused the two. A subpoena for a witness to appear at trial obviously can be issued after the discovery is over. In fact, they usually would, because trial isn't even scheduled until after discovery is over, so you wouldn't know when to subpoena a witness for trial. So apparently she's responding with the wrong statute, dealing with the wrong kind of subpoena. Going on further, there is no excuse for Ms. Camp's delay in issuing the subpoenas. Most of the subpoenas are duplicative of subpoenas that were subject to a motion to quash that was decided on November 16th, 2023. At that hearing, the court specifically questioned Ms. Camp's counsel, she was represented still then, about what additional discovery she needed to complete before the close of fact discovery. That discussion specifically included questions about whether Ms. Camp would reissue these subpoenas. In other words, Ms. Camp has known since the November 16th, 2023 hearing that if she wanted to obtain the information, she would need to reissue the subpoenas before the close of discovery. Ms. Camp did not give proper notice of her intent to serve the subpoenas as required by Rule 45C. That's another reason they're wrong. The subpoenas issued by Ms. Camp on DonorBox and WFB were nearly identical to the subpoenas this court previously quashed. During the hearing on the motion seeking to quash those subpoenas and in the written order prepared by Ms. Camp's counsel, that's in italics because your own counsel prepared the order. You can't go saying, I didn't know. I didn't understand the order. Your own counsel prepared the order that was signed by the judge. The court found that the requested information included trade secret information and ordered that certain protocols be followed if the subpoenas were reissued. And here's quoting from the order prepared by Jen Camp's counsel. To the extent defendant chooses to reissue its subpoenas to DonorBox or Wells Fargo Bank, DonorBox and Wells Fargo Bank shall be provided with a copy of this order. All documents produced by DonorBox or Wells Fargo Bank shall be designated and treated as attorney's eyes only. The documents produced by DonorBox may be shared with defendant Jennifer Camp only if all personal identifying information is redacted. Okay. This is from the order prepared by Jen Camp's counsel back from November of 2023. And she went forward with her own motion, her own subpoenas to these two places, Wells Fargo Bank and DonorBox, in violation of that order. The court ordered that the documents requested from DonorBox and WFB not be provided to Ms. Camp and instead be treated as attorney's eyes only or only be produced in anonymized fashion. It ordered that any reissued subpoena include with it a copy of the court's order so the person who receives the subpoena knows about the court's order, right, and can follow it. None of the subpoenas filed by Ms. Camp with the court included a copy of the court's order. And in any event, Ms. Camp requesting that the documents be produced to her directly, now that she is pro se, would be in violation of the court's order. Remember the part where it says she doesn't get to see it unless it's already been redacted? I mean, she's the person who's being sued for defamation. This is why they're trying to keep potentially sensitive information about John DeLynn or his business dealings or OSF or their business dealings from coming into her hands so she can't use it to continue to defame him. That's the whole point of this. And that's why it's in violation of the court order. The court is unpersuaded by Ms. Camp's contention that plaintiffs lack standing to object to the subpoenas. Now, here's what was going on. Obviously, these subpoenas are being given to all these different people, Steve Peineker, me, Maven, DonorBox, all these different things. And what Jen Camp is trying to say is OSF doesn't have standing or the ability to object to those subpoenas being issued to these other different people. We would have to object to it ourselves, is what she's saying. And the court's saying, no, not buying it. The court is unpersuaded by Ms. Camp's contention that plaintiffs lack standing to object to the subpoenas. So they do. OSF and John DeLynn can object to these subpoenas, even though they're not directed to them. It's about their case. Come on. This isn't rocket science. This court already recognized plaintiff standing. This court already recognized plaintiff standing to object to the subpoenas when, with its November 16, 2023 ruling and December 20th, 2023 order, it quashed virtually identical subpoenas, improper subpoenas, upon plaintiff's objections. Come on, you know this. We've been here before. We've done this before. They were similar subpoenas were already quashed because the plaintiffs had to object. And now you're just doing the same thing again and thinking it's okay. Further, the court's prior ruling and order are consistent with Rule 37 of the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure and Utah case law applying that rule, which permit a party to object to any discovery on the grounds provided therein. Of course, it only makes sense. Plaintiff's SODI, Statement of Discovery Issues, sets forth several bases under Rule 37 for their objections. Further, the court always has authority to enforce its own orders. Good point. Ms. Camp has not responded to any of the additional arguments made by plaintiffs as to the trade secret or privileged nature of the information sought or the improper slash disproportionate scope of the subpoenas served on DonorBox, WFB, Radio Free Mormon, ADP, Maven, YouTube, Burrell, LinkedIn, and Philadelphia Insurance Company. Indeed, Ms. Camp has offered no explanation as to why any of the information sought relates to the claims at issue in this lawsuit. What is she doing? Don't know. There is no obvious basis as to why Ms. Camp would need all of OSF's payroll information for the last 6 years, for example. OSF, that's Open Stories Foundation. She had a subpoena to OSF saying, we want all your payroll information for the last 6 years. What the hell does that have to do with this lawsuit? I mean, possibly at the last year, I don't know, but 6 years? Come on. Consistent with the court's earlier ruling, the scope of the foregoing subpoenas is still overbroad. Too much being asked for. Still disproportionate to the claims, and still seeks information that is entitled to protection. Even granting defendant every reasonable leniency, even granting Jen Camp every reasonable leniency, she is still required to meet the same standard of knowledge and practice as any qualified member of the bar. That's what it means when you go pro se. You're not supposed to get special treatment, although we'll see at the end of the order that she actually does. For each of the foregoing reasons, independently or collectively, the court quashes all of the subpoenas. Boom, they're done. Further, under these circumstances, it would be unfair to require plaintiffs to incur the cost of filing a SODI statement on discovery issues to quash the subpoenas that were issued after the close of fact discovery and in a manner that violated the court's earlier order and direct instructions related to those subpoenas. That makes absolute sense. It would not be fair to have OSF and John DeLynn have to pay their attorneys for a motion to quash these subpoenas that were so beyond the pale and so wrongly issued for so many reasons. But here's where it gets strange, okay? Because now it's going to flip in this last thing. And it says, accordingly, the court denies plaintiff's request for the costs and attorney's fees. It is so ordered. So this line here sets you up to think that the court is going to order attorney's fees be paid by Jen Camp for forcing the OSF attorneys to do work that they shouldn't have to do because Jen Camp is sending out subpoenas in violation of prior court orders. But then the court goes ahead and turns around and yeah, she's pro se. And I've seen this a million times with pro se defendants. Yeah, we're going to hold you to the same standards of a lawyer, but okay, we're not going to require you to pay costs and attorney's fees for this, which ends up being OSF and John DeLynn have to pay all the attorney's fees for their attorneys to file this motion to quash, which they never should have had to file because Jen Camp was violating court orders by issuing all these subpoenas. So that's the end of the order there. Okay, now let me go over here. Let me see if I can find this. Here we go. Make this bigger. And then we find much more recently, and I think this was filed on March 7th of this year. Now we get back to that motion she had filed that we talked about at the beginning for the counterclaims and also to add me and Gerardo in as counter defendants. Here's the order now, March 7th. Denied. Order denying defendant's motion for leave to file counterclaim and add additional parties. Yes, this order makes me very happy. Let's read it together, shall we? And I'm going to once again double check and just make sure it's up there on the screen. It does appear to be. All right, let's go back to it then. Let me see. Here it is. Before the court is defendant's corrected motion to seek leave to file a counterclaim and add additional parties. By the way, the reason it's the corrected motion, on February 5th, when I talked about this the first time, I talked about the fact that she was making a misrepresentation to the court by saying that I lived in Summit County, Utah, when I didn't even know where the heck it was and never lived in Utah in my life. The very next day or two, she filed a corrected motion, which means she took that part out. So I'm glad that she's at least listening to the program. She took that part out and then added additional language following my advice that I gave in that program about what a person should do in order to try and get me, have the court have jurisdiction over me. So she changed that as well. I thought that maybe I should send her an itemized billing so that, you know, she should pay me if I'm giving her legal advice and she's taking the legal advice and then using it. Yeah, I should be compensated for that. But I didn't do that. I thought it'd be funny, but on the other hand, I thought she'd probably use it to try and go to court down there in Utah and get a stalking protection order against me or something like that. Okay, so before the court is defendant's corrected motion to seek leave to file a counterclaim and add additional parties. And docket 448, it's getting to be a big lawsuit. And defendant's motion to consolidate and supplement counterclaim documents. Defendant's motions will hereinafter be referred to collectively as defendant's third motion for counterclaim or the motion. Remember, she filed the motion when she had attorneys, denied too late for the counterclaim. motion to reconsider when she had attorneys, denied, and now that the attorneys have left and she's on her own, she brought the same motion again, except with the addition of wanting to have me and Gerardo added as counter defendants. The court, having reviewed the motion and evidence submitted therewith, okay, and all this other stuff, considering itself fully advised, hereby denies defendant's third motion for counterclaim. Denial is appropriate as follows. This should be good. Under Utah law, a court may deny a request for leave to amend the pleadings if the amendment is untimely, without justification, would cause prejudice to the parties, is asserted in bad faith, or would otherwise be futile. Denial is appropriate here for all of those reasons, and for the additional reason that it is procedurally improper to file a motion asking the court to re-rule on issues it has already ruled upon without any legal basis for doing so. Here, the court has twice denied Defendant Camp's motions for leave to file a counterclaim. Under Utah law, if the party knew of the events or claims earlier, yet failed to plead them due to a dilatory motive, and dilatory means, you know, you snoozed, you slept on your rights, you didn't move when you had the opportunity to, a bad faith effort during the pleading process, or unreasonable neglect in terms of pleading preparation, a court may deny amendment for lack of justification. Basic thing is this: she's known about these claims forever. She never filed a counterclaim, not even when she had attorneys, which is kind of strange. She never filed a counterclaim. But if you don't know about the factual basis for a counterclaim, and if reasonable efforts on your part would not have disclosed those to you, and you do find out about them after the time limit would have passed, yeah, then you can go to a judge and a judge will say, okay, well, you could not have known reasonably with reasonable efforts about these, so I'm going to let you file them late. None of that applied here. Not a bit. So once again, under Utah law, if the party knew, that's Jen Camp, knew of the events or claims earlier, yet failed to plead them due to a dilatory motive, a bad faith effort during the pleading process, or unreasonable neglect in terms of pleading preparation, a court may deny amendment for lack of justification. The court denied Ms. Camp's first request for leave to file a counterclaim. The motion for leave to amend answer to add counterclaims, docket 17, the original motion, because it was untimely and because Ms. Camp offered no justification for her failure to assert her claims at the time she answered the complaint. She already knew of the facts and issues and claims before filing her response and did not bring the claims. Okay, hang on just a second here. Excuse me. Okay, so let me go back to this. Camp filed her original motion nearly 5 months after the complaint was filed on February 7th, 2023. 3 months after she filed her answer, and 8 months after most of the alleged events had occurred. So in other words, she already knew about them. This isn't stuff that came up later. Virtually all of Ms. Camp's allegations in any version of her proposed counterclaim relate to events that occurred in August 2022 or earlier. She knew about them. That Ms. Camp knew about those claims is indisputable. Ms. Camp had asserted her claim. Ms. Camp had asserted her claims or claims arising from those allegations in a federal complaint filed January 17, 2023. That's the complaint that Jen Camp filed on her own before she got attorneys in the wrong courthouse, in the wrong court system, in federal court. But she has all those facts in there that she's alleging. She knew all of this stuff that she could have based counterclaims on, but she never did until it was too late. Therefore, it was denied. So Ms. Camp had asserted those claims in a federal complaint filed January 17, 2023 that she chose not to pursue and which was dismissed sua sponte for failure to prosecute. Sua sponte means by her own motion for failure to prosecute, or by the judge's own motion. Usually sua sponte is applied to a judge. Yeah, on the judge's own motion. Ms. Camp filed her original motion 3 days after she served her responses to written discovery, so that plaintiffs had nearly exhausted their discovery before they were ever aware of Ms. Camp's proposed claims. So this is part of the game that was being played. Once again, you only have for each party a certain number of deposition hours, a certain number of discovery requests that you can use. And she waited until basically all of OSFs were used before she sprung this late request to file a counterclaim against them. Judge didn't go for that. So it was 3 days after she served her responses to written discovery. Excuse me. That was terrible. Definitely going to do that. So Ms. Camp filed her original motion for counterclaims 3 days after she served her responses to written discovery. So in other words, the plaintiffs had nearly exhausted their discovery before they were ever aware of her proposed counterclaims. The court denied Ms. Camp's second motion, the renewed motion for leave to amend answer to add counterclaims, on the same basis as it denied the original motion, and for the additional reason that Ms. Camp's second motion was a motion for reconsideration that was not properly before the court. With her third motion, and that's the motion they're ruling on here, with her third motion, Ms. Camp seeks leave to assert a counterclaim that is virtually identical to the proposed counterclaim attached to her original and second motions. All of the causes of action in the third proposed counterclaim are the same, and all but seven of the allegations are the same or similar as those proposed and rejected as untimely and without justification in the orders denying the original and second motions. You get the idea that Jane Camp is starting to test the patience of the court. The new allegations relate to alleged conduct by Radio Free Mormon and Gerardo Sumano, who are not parties to this litigation and who cannot properly be characterized as counterclaim defendants. Ms. Camp's original proposed counterclaim made similar allegations, specifically identifying Mr. RFM and Sumano as individuals who had allegedly worked with Mr. DeLynn to smear Ms. Camp. In other words, she already made these allegations in her original stuff. So why is she waiting until so long until discovery's over to try and add me and Gerardo in as counter defendants? Yet Ms. Camp did not seek to add them as parties until after discovery was complete. There is no new conduct alleged against them, only conclusory statements in paragraphs 137 and 138 that their conduct is ongoing. All of the allegations in the proposed counterclaim occurred before March 7th, 2023, when Ms. Camp filed her answer. In other words, she knew it. This is showing that she knew this information before she filed her answer, and she could have filed her answer with counterclaims at that time. It's not new information she learned about later. All of the new allegations asserted relate to conduct that began and which Ms. Camp was aware of more than a year before she filed her third motion. Even paragraphs 137 and 138, which Ms. Camp relies on to argue she has new evidence for her claims. Remember, she was saying, oh, I've got new evidence. She knows she has to say, I have new evidence for these claims in order to get in after the discovery's over. The problem is that that wasn't true. This wasn't new evidence. She'd known about this forever. Okay. Even paragraphs 137 and 138, which Ms. Camp relies on to argue she has new evidence for her claims, contain only conclusory statements that the conduct she complains of against Radio Free Mormon and Gerardo Sumano that occurred in March 2023 and October 2022, respectively, has continued. Ms. Camp attaches evidence to her third motion to claim that she is seeking leave to assert a counterclaim now because she was not previously aware of the evidence. That's really bad because that's not true. In other words, she has attached evidence to her third motion to claim that she is seeking leave to assert a counterclaim now because she was not previously aware of the evidence. She's not being candid with the court. She's not telling the truth to the court. She's lying to the court. All but one item of evidence is evidence that was in Ms. Camp's control and which appears through metadata or the document itself to show that she has had such evidence or access to it since March 2023 at the latest. And that's where she was caught being disingenuous to the court. There's a lot of things that judges don't like. Top of the list is people lying to them. Further, even if such evidence could properly be characterized as new, which it can't, it still would not support Ms. Camp's third motion as it does not provide a basis for asserting a new claim that Ms. Camp was previously unaware of. And even if it did, Ms. Camp would be limited to asserting only those claims arising from the new evidence. She cannot resurrect claims she was previously aware of and failed to raise by pointing to evidence she claims is additional evidence of those claims. Okay. A review of the evidence and the proposed counterclaim reveal no evidence of new claims. Instead, all of the claims Ms. Camp seeks to assert in her third proposed counterclaim are identical to those she sought to assert in her original and second proposed counterclaims, which the court already determined were untimely and without justification. Denial is therefore appropriate on the same bases upon which this court has already twice denied Ms. Camp's motions for leave to file a counterclaim. Her third motion is untimely and without justification. It goes on. Further, as with Ms. Camp's second motion, it is not procedurally proper to refile a motion that has already been decided by the court and ask it to reconsider its prior rulings without a recognized basis for doing so. You can't keep going to a judge and saying, hey, I want you to change your mind on this ruling that you did against me. I mean, you get one chance for a motion for reconsideration, but that's limited to new evidence or law that you were not aware of or could not have reasonably been made aware of, made yourself aware of, before you filed the original motion and had it heard. Courts are not a place where you keep going back and saying, please, please, oh, come on, please. And yet that's what's been happening here. Not going to have it. Not here, not any court that I know of. Ms. Camp has not identified any basis for this court to reconsider its prior rulings. You got to have a basis, man. Accordingly, the third motion is denied on the additional basis that it is a procedurally improper motion to reconsider the court's prior rulings. The third motion, excuse me for just a second here. The third motion is also appropriately denied for the additional reason that granting leave to file a counterclaim at this late stage of the litigation would cause undue prejudice to plaintiffs. Fact discovery concluded on January 15, 2024, after a number of extensions that were requested by defendant, Jen Camp. The third proposed counterclaim, if filed, includes 12 claims and 222 allegations that were not part of the case prior to the close of discovery. Ms. Camp also seeks to add two new parties to the litigation, Radio Free Mormon and Gerardo Simano, who have not been part of the case. Ms. Camp waited until 3 days after plaintiff's written discovery was nearly exhausted to file her original motion, until after key depositions were complete to file her second motion, and until after discovery ended to file her third motion. And she thinks the odds are going to go up that the judge is going to grant it. Plaintiffs have exhausted their discovery except for a few hours of deposition time. Allowing amendment after the exhaustion of discovery would leave plaintiffs without a way to properly prepare a defense to the new claims and allegations. Further, even if plaintiffs were granted extraordinary discovery, allowing such claims to be asserted now, especially against two individuals who have never been parties to this action, like me, would require plaintiffs to essentially restart discovery. Yeah, it's like what I said last time. If you put me in it, if you put Gerardo in it, we're coming in as new people. You've got to start everything all over again, at least insofar as it relates to us with discovery. I've got a right to have discovery if I'm a counter-defendant. Gerardo has a right to do discovery if he's a counter-defendant, and depositions and everything else. You'd be starting everything all over from scratch if this were allowed. This would be immensely expensive, both in terms of the cost of repeating discovery and in the additional damages plaintiffs may accrue as a result of the delay in resolution of the matter. Accordingly, Ms. Camp's third motion is properly denied because of the undue prejudice it would cause to the plaintiffs. Going on, finally, Ms. Camp's third motion must be denied because the claims and a significant portion of the allegations it proposes appear to be futile or asserted in bad faith. And I'm going to leave out all the stuff that's in parentheses, which is where they quote from cases. And yeah, although not clearly stated in the proposed counterclaim, I'm down to paragraph 27 now. Ms. Camp's claims against Mr. Sumano and Radio Free Mormon appear to be primarily that they offered opinions. That's me. This is what her counterclaim is, that I offered opinions about the dispute, and that Mr. Sumano, a contractor for plaintiff Open Stories Foundation, has provided assistance as part of his job duties to OSF in pursuing this case. That's all she alleged. Statements of opinions and performing job duties related to litigation do not appear to form any actionable cause of action and would likely be subject to dismissal under Rule 12b-6 of the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure, i.e. frivolous. Further, there are a number of allegations made by Ms. Camp that appear to be immaterial, impertinent, or scandalous, or without possible relation or logical connection to the claims asserted. A Rule 12F motion for striking unnecessary averments of evidentiary facts, superfluous historical allegations, and allegations that improperly cast a derogatory light on someone would likely result in the striking of many of Ms. Camp's allegations. Now, you may not know exactly what that refers to. I know what it refers to, and it's stuff that I did not go into in my last podcast. It's stuff I'm not going into this podcast, but there are certain people who Jen Camp decided to make all sorts of scurrilous allegations about, and really, really offensive allegations about, including members of John Dolan's family, other people who are not parties, which were made obviously just in order to try and, I don't know, drag their name through the mud. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. And this is what this is referring to. And actually, now that I've said that, let me read this again, because it'll make more sense to you, I'm sure. Where it says, further, there are a number of allegations made by Ms. Camp that appear to be immaterial, impertinent, or scandalous. And it goes on to say, a Rule 12F motion for striking unnecessary averments of evidentiary facts and allegations that improperly cast a derogatory light on someone would likely result in the striking of many of Ms. Camp's allegations. Yes, it would. I'm not going over those, and there's a reason I'm not, because I'm not going to be Jen Camp's monkey's paw in order to try and broadcast her scandalous allegations against different people. Accordingly, the third proposed counterclaim is appropriately denied because significant portions thereof are futile or asserted in bad faith, and therefore would likely be stricken and or dismissed under Rule 12 of the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure. Attorney's fees are warranted. They're going to mean it this time. This is great. Plaintiffs have now had to respond three times to Ms. Camp's efforts to file a counterclaim. In response to her second motion, the court expressly told Ms. Camp that filing a motion asking the court to revisit earlier rulings was not a proper procedure recognized by the court. But yet again filing a motion seeking leave to file a counterclaim, Ms. Camp is effectively violating the court's second order, denying the second motion. Even granting defendant every reasonable leniency, she is still required to meet the same standard of knowledge and practice as any qualified member of the bar. Under these circumstances, it would be unfair to require plaintiffs to incur the costs of responding to the third motion, and this time the judge actually means it. Accordingly, the court grants plaintiffs' request for the costs and attorney's fees they incurred as a result of their third motion, denied as to the motion on the subpoenas, granted as to the motion as to her third motion for counterclaim, and to add me and Gerardo as counter-defendants. Plaintiffs shall submit an affidavit of fees within 10 days of this order. Additionally, the court will grant a request for fees if defendant files additional motions seeking leave to file a counterclaim. So that's the shot across the bow. If you haven't gotten it yet, Jen, paragraph 35, knock it off. If you file any additional motions seeking leave to file a counterclaim, you're gonna get sanctioned with more attorney's fees, is what's gonna happen if you do that. So knock it off. This is over. This is done. You're going to have to start conducting yourself in a more professional way, like a good attorney would. It is so ordered. Court signature is affixed to the upper right-hand corner of this document. End of order. And I understand, though I don't have any documents on it, that the amount of time and effort that OSF and John DeLynn's attorney spent in filing that motion to dismiss her third, Jen Camp's third motion for counterclaims comes in at around $12,000. So that's what they're going to be filing. And that's what Jen Camp is going to be ordered to pay to John DeLynn and OSF's attorneys by this order of the court. My voice is starting to fail me. There's something that happened as a result of that, which has to do with the new bar complaint against me, which I will get to as soon as I can. But right now, I'm just going to take this off the screen, and I think that's everything that we'll be talking about here today. So, trying to get back in the saddle, I'm going to go back. I'm going to edit a little bit of this where I coughed, regardless of my best efforts, and I hope you enjoy this. So, that's what's going on down there in Utah. It looks like Jen Camp is finally being told that she needs to quit bringing the same motions and quit trying to do things that she's not supposed to do in court. I think at this point, discovery's over. It should get set for a trial, and hopefully it will go to trial, and this thing will be behind us. But right now, Jen Camp is in a position where she's being sued by OSF and John DeLynn. She's been sanctioned for attorney's fees. She has no counterclaims, which means the best she can do, the best she could possibly do in this case is a zero. To have the plaintiffs be denied any of their claims against her by a jury, because she's got nothing coming the other way. She has no counterclaims. All of those have been dismissed for the reasons that we've talked about and the reasons that the judge went into. She has no counterclaims. She's in a boxing match where her hands are tied behind her back, and all she can do is bob and weave. She's got nothing to come back with. There's no way for a jury to say, okay, well, we're not going to give OSF this money, but we're going to give Jen Camp this money because we agree with your counterclaim, because there's no counterclaims there. I think I've made it clear enough. All right. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope that you've enjoyed this. And thanks so much for listening. It's a great ride. I hope that Jen Camp is enjoying it as much as I am. And I hope that you're enjoying it as well. Thanks for listening. I'm going to come on over here. I'm going to have to end the recording. And let me see. It's been a while since I've done this. So I think I know how to do this. Yeah. And I think I'm ready. So until next time, this is Radio Free Mormon signing off the air.